Hello, everyone, and welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast of the Locked On Sports Network. I'm Chris Manning, your host, editor. I'm also an editor at Fear the Sword, a staff writer at Hardwood Paroxysm, and I freelance for some other places. Today is our first mailbag podcast, so it's just me on the podcast today. Later in the week, I will have a number of guests, including Chops from Complex, who interviewed Kyrie Irving, fanside editor Ian Levy, Jacob Rosen, who writes for HP and waiting for next year in some other places, and a number of other people in the next couple weeks, and I'm really, really excited to have on. Justin Rowan is also a guest we're having this week. Didn't want to forget you, Justin, if you're listening. But today, it's Monday. We're going to do Mailbag Mondays, which a lot of other sites or podcasts in the Locked On Network do. I'm really excited to do one for the first time. We may not do one again until it gets closer to the season because we're going to not have as much to talk about. But I'm really thankful for all the questions we got for this first one. In the future, you can tweet us questions at Locked On Cavs on Twitter and leave your suggestions for what we'd like to talk about on the show. And also email us at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Anyway, to hop right in today, our first question is from Matt Keenan. He sent it via email, and his question is, will Kay Felder spend more time on the Charge or the Cavs this year? Matt, that's a pretty good question. I think a lot of people, including myself, are excited about Kay Felder. He's very athletic. He seems to know the game pretty well. He's a guy who has a lot of upside, and I think that's exciting. But he's also sort of a raw player in some ways. His jump shot's not there. The Cavs don't need him to do what he's really good at right now. And I think you're going to see him spend a lot of time with the Charge, and I think that's good for him. I think the best case for him is to spend time in the D-League, get to play. And because Canton is so close to Cleveland, he can hang out with the team. He can practice with the team and under Tyronn Lue and get mentorship from Ty Lue and from Kyrie and from Mo Williams. And still get to play all the time under the supervision of the Charge. And remember, the Cavs run the Charge. It is their D-League affiliate, so it's not like he's going to go out with some random D-League team way far away from the team and not be under the Cavs' eye. I think you're going to see him develop that way, and maybe he sees some minutes when they're getting blowouts or if they just want to give Mo a rest or something and just let him grow with an eye towards the future, but I expect to see him spend a lot more time with the Chargers this year. It's not official yet that that's the case, but that's just my hunch, and I think, personally, I think it's better for him. I think he just won't get a lot from sitting on the bench. He will get some from sitting on the bench, but I think he needs to mix those two things. Our next question comes from Twitter via Josh Van Sickle, whose Twitter handle is @Baron_Van Sickle. He asked myself and David Zavok, my manager at Fear the Sword, if you could have either one, and if I'm the Cavs GM on the Cavs at the minimum, would it be Deion Waiters or Ray Allen? It's an interesting question because the Cavs have one roster spot left. It could be filled by Cedi Osman, but that's not for sure because he's going to take some time to come over and whatnot. I'm going to say that Allen's the way to go here, and here's why. As longtime Fear the Sword readers and maybe some podcast listeners know, I'm a Deion Waiters guy. I'm a fan of Deion, maybe for reasons that are more funny than actual basketball, but I own, like, the Waiters Island t-shirt. My condo on Waiters Island, to quote the great Zach Lowe, is not at the highest price right now. But with Allen, you know what you're getting. You know you're going to get a guy who's going to hit threes. He's not going to defend very well, but he's going to hit threes and maybe play some minutes and space the floor. Ray Allen's going to be hitting threes until he's 90 and in a wheelchair. Like, the guy's just a great shooter, one of the best of all time. With Deion, you'd have higher upside. And the same thing really could be extended to Lance Stephenson as well. So keep that in mind when I say this. But he's sort of an enigma. He doesn't really fit anywhere perfectly. He doesn't really function as an off-ball guard the way the Cavs would want him to. He sort of just hasn't fit in the NBA in a perfect way yet. So I would say, Allen, you're going to get something pretty useful out of him. With Deion, there's higher upside, but there's also a lower floor. And it's just not really worth some of the – I mean, you would never bring him back anyway. But, like, Lance, I don't know if you want to bring that into your locker room when you're already a sort of dramatic team. And I just don't think it's worth it. So that's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong. Deion's also probably not available at a minimum contract, to be honest. He's going to get more money than that. He's worth more money than that, even if he hasn't signed a deal yet. Even if the Thunder just let him go by rescinding his qualifying offer. So just not really in the cards, I think, for Deion either way. But, you know, and if it was possible, I would still go with Ray Allen. From user James E. Powell 27, a suggestion for the Cavs offense to take advantage of Kevin Love's strengths. If I was Tyronn Lue, what would I do? So This is also another interesting question, and I think I'll probably answer another Kevin Love question later on, but with Kevin Love, I think you have to get him involved organically. And what I mean by that is you can't just do what the Cavs did sometimes this year and just give him post-up attempts just to give him post-up attempts and say, okay, we gave Kevin Love touches, like, let's just do that now. You have to make it a regular thing you do that defenses have to take seriously. You have to do it in spots where he's comfortable. And also, for him, he has to be comfortable. I think something with Kevin Love that maybe he's hinted at but never come out and said, but also it's, I think, sort of known, is that with Kevin Love, you can't just give him touches randomly and then never give it to him again. You have to keep him involved. You have to keep him engaged, and you have to make it feel comfortable for him. He's a guy who I think you need to get him in a rhythm a little bit, get him in a pattern, and I think that's the case for everybody in the world, no matter what you're doing. You need to get established routines and patterns to really succeed. So I think if the Cavs want to make Love a bigger part of what they're going to do on that end of the floor, they need to design plays where he runs a pick and roll with LeBron or Kyrie, and he rolls or he pops and he takes some threes. You need to give him straight up touches at the elbow, maybe with some bench units around shooting where he can utilize the passing skill he hasn't really been able to showcase with the Cavs. You have a bunch of other things with him that I think you could do, but you need to make it organic. You need to just let Kyrie and LeBron work off of Love in a way that really doesn't happen. But I also just wonder, if you haven't seen it already, why would they do it now? I guess you could argue because LeBron's going to maybe take some time off next year, and I think you want to rest him, you use Love in that regard. But at the same time, it would take some really good planning to do it. But, you know, Tyronn Lue also was a guy who said this year he wanted to get Love involved and stuff, and it's harder to do that when you come into the middle of the season and you don't have a training camp and you have less practices than you would if you could plan on it over the summer and then implement it during training camp, during preseason. So, but that would be how I would do it. I'd give him touches where he was really good with the Wolves and just kind of go from there and see how things turned out. From David Anthony Taft via email, what are two things like to see from Kevin Love this season? So just another Kevin Love question. I would say I'd want to see him just consistently put in effort on defense. He's never going to be a great defender, but he can be workable, and I just want to see him put in effort there, and especially on the boards, and just not get beat when he's getting frustrated. And I'd like to see him just get more touches and kind of function at the level I know he, or at least I believe that he can, because I think he's still a really good player and whatnot. This is a question from Twitter user 330 and 513, Paps Benatar. It's a great Twitter name, by the way. He said, "What's up with Seti? Coming this year or next?" You know, I don't know for sure. I don't think anyone knows for sure except maybe Seti and his agent. There are rumblings that I have heard from people, and some other people on our site have heard, but nothing definitive. And other reporters have heard this too, that he wants to come over. But you know, if I'm the Cavs, I don't know if this is the right time. I don't know if you want to take on a salary. I don't know if you want to lock up that roster spot and a guy who might not play a lot. You maybe could say, okay, get him under your supervision, help him develop his jumper in Canton, and you know, him and Felder can develop that way. But at the same time, I think you could say, you know what? You play in Europe for a year. We'll see what we got with Jordan McRae. We can maybe have you come next year and do that. I'm going to say that he comes over next year. I feel like we maybe would have heard by now. It's getting about that time. And I just think it makes sense for him to come next year. He's still very young. He's a guy with upside, and I think you just let him play for another year overseas, and then he comes to the Cavs next year. But at the same time, it wouldn't shock me if you know, he's wearing wine and gold come October. But if he does, I also just want to say the same thing with Kay Felder. Temper your expectations a little bit. I know he's a talented guy. I know it's fun to get excited about young guys, but he's raw. He doesn't really have a great jump shot yet, and he's going to take some time to develop into an NBA player. So, and you have Richard Jefferson and Mike Dunleavy and those guys and Shumpert and J.R. Smith on the wing, so you don't really need him to play. So if he comes, don't expect him to be a guy who's playing right away. I'd say he's probably spending time in Canton and developing. Him and Kay Felder are, and maybe Jordan McRae to an extent too, although he's a little bit older, are this example of the Cavs doing some different things and starting to invest in guys and trying to look towards, hey, can we find a talented young guy who can turn into something in time, which would be pretty cool. And I think if you're a Cavs and you want to hope that Seti is that guy, because he looks like a dude who can play in the NBA, at least from what I've watched on film. Other people have watched him more, but the little I've seen, I am pretty excited about what he can do. This is another question from David Taft. He's asking pretty good questions. That's why he's in here a couple times. So he has, how many All-Stars will the Cavs send to New Orleans, assuming that's where the All-Star game is, considering the NBA smartly and rightly, I may add, moved it from Charlotte to somewhere. But it might be New Orleans, considering some of their setups are easier for them to go there. So LeBron's definitely going to make it, because he's LeBron. I'm going to say Kyrie makes it. So the real question is, does Kevin Love make the All-Star game? I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I might be wrong, but I'm going to say three. Love, Kyrie, LeBron, get three Cavs there. I'm down for that. Another question from Matt Keenan. When should we expect a JR deal to get done by? I would say August, September. I know that's a broad range, but I just, you know, it's really just, I think, I have this theory that deal is really just mostly kind of figured out by now. It is a deal that is, it's not really a question of his value. And, both sides of leverage. JR can be like, hey, you can't replace me, so pay me. The Cavs can be like, well, look, who's going to pay you now that free agency is mostly wrapped up? It seemed like the Grizzlies, who may have paid J.R. Smith, don't really have an incentive to now because they got Chandler Parsons. They spent money on Mike Conley. They don't have the money to pay J.R. money. So there aren't a lot of suitors out there for J.R. Smith. I'd say I'm going to just ballpark it and say end of August will be when J.R. resigns. I'm going to say August 20th just because why not? And I'm going to say, by the way, he signed for 3 years, $42 or $43 million, team option on the third year. Just a guess, but there's not really a rush either. He signed in September last year, if I'm not mistaken. It's not a big deal if he signs then. And he's coming back. Like, I'd be very surprised if he is not a Cavalier next season. We have another question here from David Taft. Could the loss of Dele mean an increase to Amon Shumpert's minutes? Shumpert's a guy that could benefit there, but Mike Dunleavy could too. I think you'll see Shump maybe play some a nominal one where he's just guarding point guards while LeBron runs the offense. And with bench units, so yeah, I'd say yeah. But I also think Mo Williams is going to take some of those minutes, and Mike Dunleavy will take some of those kind of hybrid guard role minutes just because you don't get Mike Dunleavy and not play him. We'll ask him a couple more questions here. We had another one from Matt Keenan. What do I think of Derrick Rose's comment that the Knicks and the Warriors are the super teams of the NBA? It's funny. He's not right. Like, the Knicks are, I kind of don't hate the Knicks offseason overall, to be honest with you, because I like Hermann Gomez. JR could be a guy that works for them in some ways. It's not perfect, I guess, but it's not terrible. But they're not a super team. They're not going to win a title. It's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs, so it's funny. The Warriors and the Cavs are super teams, and when people talk about super teams, that's it. So we're going to do three more questions here and wrap it up. So this is one from David Taft. David, thank you for asking so many questions. Same to Matt Keenan. I really appreciate it, guys. So keep asking them in the future. And anyone else listening, remember, you can ask questions too. David's questions, a lot of people talk about LeBron's decline defensively during the regular season. Many thought it could have been due to a decrease in lateral quickness because of aging. To me, it always seemed that it had more to do with lower effort that came in with his preservation and chill mode mindset, in quotes. After this playoff run, do you think it would be fair in any way for people to still believe that LeBron has lost anything at the end of the floor? I think it is, personally, because, I mean, I know LeBron was great in the finals and he turned on his gear, but younger LeBron could do that for a whole season. He's still capable of doing it, but LeBron, it's not fair to just be like, he's still a great defender because he turns it on that moment. You have to do it consistently and be engaged consistently to really be considered in that regard and be the same guy in that end. It's not the LeBron that you saw when he was younger and could do it all season and just had all this energy. He's not old, you know, but it's harder for him to do it. Like, just when you play that many minutes and you're 32 and you need to be strategic about yourself, like, and taking care of your body, that's fair. So I think he has lost some things in another floor. I don't think it's necessarily because of his athleticism declining. It's probably a little bit lower, but not, you know, like a complete drop-off. So I think there's some loss there, but it's not, like, astronomical. I think it's fair to say that he's lost something there. It's just time is undefeated. Time catches up to everybody, whether you're, you know, average Joe playing pickup ball with your friends and suddenly you can't, you know, blow by someone anymore when you turn 35 and your knees get a little creaky. And if you're LeBron James and you're a superhuman and you're just this dude who could leap out of the gym, sometimes you're going to be able to jump lower as you get past 30. So, you know, it is some of the effort thing, but it also is just when you can't perform at that level all the time, you do lose something. And again, time is undefeated for LeBron James, for Kobe Bryant, for Steph Curry, for KD, for Kyrie, for anybody that has ever played anything or done anything. Time is undefeated. So, we had a guy named Jeff in Brooksville who sent us an email asking, favorite pair of Nike basketball shoes. I'm partial to the Kyrie 2s. I think they're very comfortable. I think they're very easy to play in. They're also pretty affordable. I'm also a fan of the LeBron lows. They're stylish, they're comfortable, but they're a little bit, I mean, they're more expensive than the Kyrie 2s, but I'm a fan of both of those. I also like the new KDs that are coming out. One thing you'll know if you follow me on Twitter a little bit is that along with Ryan Morton, I do like basketball shoes. I think they're stylish, I think they're comfortable, I think they're cool, and it's a big part of covering the Cavs, honestly, is knowing what's going on with shoes, because you have two guys on the team with signature sneakers, and they're honestly cool. And there's people out there that do a lot better job than me than covering the shoe market, but I think it's interesting. And the last thing that comes in is from John in Toledo. He asked me, Chris, you know, there's Olympic basketball coming up, but other than that, there's not really much else going on. What should I read or watch during that time off? Do you have any recommendations? So I have three things I would recommend. One, if you want to watch a really good TV show, I'm going to recommend Peaky Blinders on Netflix, the BBC production, starring Cillian Murphy, who you probably best know for playing the Scarecrow in the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy. A really talented Irish actor. A lot of other good actors in the movie. TV series. You have Tom Hardy coming in and hitting like 1,000 in this really small role, which is kind of great. So that's pretty cool. If you want a movie to watch, I would recommend The Lobster, starring Colin Farrell. I'm not going to bother explaining because it's going to sound really weird and you'll probably just get a little alienated by it, but I really recommend that. It's super good. It's super interesting, and Colin Farrell is actually a really good actor. I didn't believe it until this movie. So check out that. And if you want something to read, I actually recommend two things here. Yago Kolas, who is a professor at the University of Michigan, he recently published a book called Ball Don't Lie, which is obviously the famous Rasheed Wallace phrase. It's super good. It's about the cultures of basketball, and you can get it on Amazon pretty cheap. Yago is doing a summer read over at Hardwood Paroxysm, which you should also check out, with Ian Levy that is doing that. And it's a really good book. I'm almost done with it. I've learned a lot about basketball, not really the game, but like the culture behind it and how sort of we view things, like referees and the power dynamics there. It's super interesting. It's maybe a little bit meta, but I really, really enjoy it. And you can get it on Amazon for like $15. It's a really quick, easy read, like 160 pages, I think, so worth your time. If you want something a little just a bit more fun, I'm going to recommend the new Green Arrow series from DC Comics. I'm also a nerd, for those of you listening, but this Green Arrow series, I can't remember who wrote it, so I apologize, but it's really good. It, you know, brings Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow, back to some of his social justice roots, which he was back in the 70s during the Silver Age of Comics, and it's really good. You got some new villains kind of coming in there. It's taking him out of sort of these big picture things, which he's been in for a while, and doing some more street level stuff, which I'm cool with. He's got the Van Dyke beard, which, you know, isn't on the show or on the CW. And again, it's back to the social justice Oliver Queen. It finds him, a little spoiler here, it finds him back in this position where he's advocating for people and he's penniless and everyone thinks he's dead, and he just has to kind of do things for the common man in a way big billionaire Oliver Queen hasn't. And it's a really good series, so I check it out. You can get it on Comixology for like $2.99 a week, every other week, so it's not too expensive either if you are a fan of comics. But that is our mailbag for this Monday. I hope whenever you're listening, whether it's now on Monday or in the future, that you enjoyed. And as usual, we'll have a podcast every day the rest of the week. We will then have one the week after that every day, and then some during the Olympics. But we'll probably take some breaks just because it'll be August and not a lot going on. But and maybe we won't have a mailbag between now and then, but we will see. If you guys send in questions just on your own, feel free to. I will get to them at some point, I promise. And I will definitely email you back if you email us. This has been a really, really fun thing.
price with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.